The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walzer. Rebecca is a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth during this volatile market. Book your complimentary call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. Now, today I'm going to talk about the latest fact check on 2000 Mules, which claims that the movie can't be trusted. You know why? On account of its blurring of the image of a dog. I'm going to examine NPR, National Public Radio's rage over state laws that are limiting people like Mark Zuckerberg from putting up all this money to infiltrate election offices and control election practices around the country. Also, Dr. Simone Gold is going to join me. We're going to talk about her January 6th ordeal. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
This voice. The times are crazy, and a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
The latest fact check on 2000 Mules, this is a funny one, is written by a guy named Will Nevin. He's a assistant professor and program coordinator for communications media. This is actually ironic because we're going to examine his ability to communicate, which let's just say is not superior. But why should it be? He's after all at Alabama A&M University. Now, I guess that's where you go after you graduate from night school. Alabama A&M University, here I come. I've heard of Texas A&M, everyone has, but Alabama A&M, really? Anyway, every university does have to hire professors, and I guess they found this guy somewhere. So he claims that, quote, experts have thoroughly debunked the claims of 2000 Mules. Blah, blah, blah. That's just the usual recycled boilerplate. And then he goes, but even though it's been debunked, there's an interesting moment. He goes, yeah, doesn't mean the film is without some interesting moments, or rather an interesting moment. He finds only one moment in the film that interests him. And what is that? Well, it's the scene involving what in the movie is called Dog Guy. Now, let's imagine the scene here, and I'm just quoting from the movie here. We see a guy with a dog, and Catherine Engelbrecht says he's got the ballots under his arm, now he's got the rest he pulled out of the bag. You can see all this going on. So clearly something fishy and corrupt is going on. You've got a guy with a backpack of ballots who's pulling them out and stuffing into the box. And then Phillips then says, and he's going to get his camera ready to take the pictures as he puts them in there. And if you consider the brazenness of this, it's in the middle of the day. Now, the professor, this is Will Nevin, weighs in to say, the film claims without evidence that the procedure for mules included taking pictures of ballots in order to be paid, excluding more reasonable explanations like, say, people sharing pictures of their participation in democracy on social media. Let's pause right there. We have not a single picture, not a single case of a mule taking his own picture. Now, if you had mules shooting themselves in front of the ballot box, yeah, I can see posting that on Instagram, posting on Facebook, I voted, I have an I voted sticker. There's no image of that. In every case, we see the mule taking a photo, not a selfie, but rather of the ballots going in the box. So which is a better explanation, that he's trying to post his participation in social media? What, a hand putting ballots into a box where you can't identify who's doing it? Or is it more likely that the mules are doing that to say, listen, I was there, I got the job done, I need to get paid? So this is a classic example of not accurately describing what the photo shows, so you can then lie about what the plausible explanation for it is and act as if the movie was negligent in not considering an alternative explanation. Now we come to the central point about Will Nevin's article. In fact, the title of his article is 2000 Mules Gives Away Its Game by Blurring a Dog. So let's look at why we apparently gave away the game by blurring the dog. And he notices, as many people do, and I do, that you have not only the mule's face that's blurred, but also the face of the dog. And then he goes on to say, well, why is that? And his answer is really simple. He goes, the reason that we do that is because we don't believe our own evidence. Because obviously, he says, they're doing this for legal reasons. They don't want the dog to be identified because then you can identify its owner and the owner might file a lawsuit. And now we come back to the text, quote, and why would D'Souza be worried about a lawsuit? He's saying if the evidence is valid, quote, I would stand by my work and let the criminals be exposed to the light of truth. And so we come to the actual question, why did Dinesh, why did I blur the dog? Well, as it turns out, a movie is a tricky business. And when you put a movie in the theater, you do face all kinds of liability. And for that liability, you get insurance. So, for example, if I'm just walking on the street, I'm taking video footage of people walking around. They're not doing anything per se. But if I put them in the film, I need a signed release from all those people authorizing the use of their image and likeness in the movie. Remember, these aren't mules. This is an ordinary guy, just basically, let's say, getting a latte. I still can't put him in the movie. So as a result, you need to have movie insurance. And the lawyers say, listen, you have to blur the face of the mules. You can't name the organizations. Now, remember, True the Vote has the original footage. By the way, the states have the original footage. They can look at the faces of the mules and the dog. True the Vote is also happy to supply the names of the left-wing nonprofit. So there's no question of any investigation being slowed down or inhibited. But for me, it's a matter of, do I get into a legal fight with these lawyers for 6 weeks, or do I put the movie out as quickly as possible so people can see it? And so I made a prudential decision. Look, it's not that important that people, quote, recognize the dog. Who cares? What we're looking to see is evidence, video evidence of illegal activity, fraudulent ballots. So if you want to know my preference, I would have put the faces of the mules, left the face of the dog, included the names of the nonprofits, but I had to make a prudential judgment. If I want this movie to be in the theater and get out now, let's just make these edits, if you will. Why? Because they're inconsequential for the experience of people watching the movie. They don't slow down any of the investigations that need to happen next. This is a vital story and we need to get it out. So bottom line of it is, I'm not scared. I'm happy to. We have the original footage. So does Raffensperger in Georgia. So do the people in Arizona. And if the authorities want to identify the mules, they surely can. Recently, I told you that Walmart has canceled MyPillow Walmart. They will no longer be selling Mike's products at their stores. Crazy stuff. When are retailers going to stop letting the left bully them into submission? Enough is enough. Mike always fires back. He's always coming out with new products. So I'm excited to announce the MyPillow Sandal. Summer is here. You're going to need some waterproof sandals to go to the beach, the pool, anywhere. These sandals aren't just practical. They're super comfortable. We just got some and can't believe how cushiony they are. The regular price of these sandals is $79.98, but they're now on sale, $49.98 with promo code Dinesh. So call 800-876-0227, that number, 800-876-0227, or go to mypillow.com. Don't forget to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. The latest witness called by the January 6th committee was Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide, or former aide, to Mark Meadows, who was the chief of staff under Trump. And Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony was immediately hailed by the media, and in fact, even by some on the right. I mean, I'm thinking here of Andy McCarthy at National Review. Very compelling. Brett Baer, of course. Oh, yes, he was completely convinced, completely on board. Crushing testimony and so on. And the media, of course, was hailing this. She's the sort of the latest savior supposedly with a Republican tag. This is part of the game. You bring in people who are nominally Republican. You say, look, even a Republican says. And she put out a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, a good bit of it was just hearsay, things that she had heard or things that she had been told. But it was sufficiently salacious, sufficiently bombshellish that the media glommed right onto them. Specifically, two things. One is that supposedly at one point, Trump got so upset when Barr told him that he had lost the election, that he flung his food, presumably a hamburger, Trump's favorite, up against the wall, leaving some ketchup on the wall. And Cassidy Hutchinson said, I had to clean it up. Now, when I first heard this, I literally chuckled because, first of all, it's hard for me to see Trump doing that. But you know what? To be honest, if an election was stolen from me under my nose, I would be a little irate. I don't think I'd have thrown a burger against the wall. I think I like burgers too much. But my comment on Twitter was, do we have the full story on this? If Trump really threw the burger and fell on the ground, did Bill Barr like reach down and eat it? Hard for me to see Bill Barr turning down a burger. But in any event, Trump, of course, was extremely scornful. And Trump makes the comment on Truth Social. He goes, why would she have to clean it up? Well, first of all, she was not a member of my staff. He goes, I didn't even know who she was. And then supposedly the big bombshell was an anecdote, an incident about Trump who wanted to go to the Capitol on January 6th and was so apparently enraged that the Secret Service was reluctant to take him that he reached over and tried to grab the steering wheel of the car. Now, at first, people were like, and I think Cassidy Hutchinson may even have said it, this was actually the so-called the beast, the big limousine, the Trump limousine. And if that was the case, this would be flat out impossible. Apparently, Trump was not in that car. He was in an SUV. But again, he's in the back seat. So the idea that he's able to somehow lunge forward, grab the steering wheel and drive the car from the back seat? No, this is preposterous. This is absurd. And it's so absurd that it couldn't have happened. And that when something couldn't have happened, you can be safe in concluding that it didn't happen. And sure enough, the driver of the vehicle and the Secret Service agent in charge have now contacted ABC and NBC and CBS and CNN and said the same thing. This did not happen. We are, in fact, happy to testify under oath that this did not occur. Now, frankly, to Cassidy Hutchinson's, in her defense, she didn't say she knew for a fact. She didn't say she was there. She said she was told. But you would think the January 6th committee that's putting this kind of bombshell evidence on national TV for the country would have checked it out. Who told you? Let's go talk to that guy to see if he was there and if it happened. Evidently, the January 6th commission was so impressed. They were so enraptured, so taken by what she said. They didn't even bother to check. They're like, we better just put this out because we know the media is going to run with it, as in fact they did. And now it turns out that, and this happens in any situation where you give a long testimony and you tell one brazen lie, and the lie is discredited, well, it calls into question everything you said. And so not only is Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony now discredited, but to some degree, so is the January 6th committee, which was really responsible for promulgating this big lie. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health. Exercising, climbing stairs, all the stuff young people take for granted. These aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to just endure patiently the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie's excited. She finally gets to do her bar exercise class now that she's alleviated her frozen shoulder thanks to Relief Factor. She knows if she stops taking it, well, the pain could come right back. So she's like, I don't want to be without this again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. Here's an interesting headline in NPR. Private funding saved the 2020 election. Now some GOP-led states are banning it. This article by Miles Parks raises the immediate question, how can private funding save an election? You have an election. Elections, by the way, are supposed to be run by, I shouldn't just say the government, but by the states themselves, using state money. They're not supposed to be vulnerable to private funding for the simple reason that private funding comes with private leverage. And private leverage can lead to control, manipulation, even the takeover of an election process. Now, the point here is that NPR knows that this is, in fact, kind of what happened, at least in certain key places like Wisconsin, in the 2020 election. It was so brazen, it was so outrageous that no one even thought to pass laws against it. And so Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Chan, put in almost $500 million. Other people put in money as well. And then using front groups, these so-called nonprofits, they were able to go to election offices and essentially say, listen, we'll give you money, but on the condition that you let our people in to help run things. Wow. So talk about manipulation of an election by private individuals using the pocketbook. I mean, here the left rails about campaign finance. We need campaign finance laws. Big money has too big a role in the election. Dinesh, you gave $20,000 over the campaign finance limit. It's a real pity you weren't locked up for 2 full years for that. You're contaminating democracy. But somehow, here it comes to Mark Zuckerberg. We're not talking about $20,000. We're not talking about $200,000. We're talking about $400 million. And yet, if you read this NPR article, you get no indication that Zuckerberg's money was used to put left-wing activists who essentially controlled the election in certain parts of Wisconsin. They had access to the computers. They had keys to the door. They controlled the absentee ballots. It's horrific. Moreover, Zuckerberg was not only able to fund drop boxes that the cities and counties themselves wanted to install. There was some of that. But in other cases, Zuckerberg was able to get cities and counties that weren't going to put all these drop boxes to do that. So basically, Zuckerberg goes, I got all this money. I'm going to give it to you, but on one condition. You have a lot of mail-in voting, and you install a lot of these drop boxes. And these drop boxes, by the way, heavily concentrated in the Democratic inner cities. Now, I'm not saying that Zuckerberg knew for sure about the mules. I don't claim that in the movie. I don't claim that now. But I am saying that if Zuckerberg hadn't paid for all those drop boxes, the mules wouldn't have any place to go to. The mules require the drop boxes. Now, you can go try dropping off in the post office, but post offices are typically all under surveillance. Much harder to do. Plus, if there's only one post office typically in an area, you're going to put a lot of ballots in that one box, and it's going to cause a big spike, and people are going to be really suspicious. How is it that people came to this physical post office from all these different zip codes and all these different counties? They all came physically here to drop off? This is really odd. So this was, from the beginning to the end, a corrupt and contaminated operation. In fact, Dave Bossi's film Rigged focuses a lot on the Zuckerberg connection. But to read the NPR article, you read things like this. In Coconino County, Arizona, the money paid for temporary staff to assist Native American voters to register and vote. Now, quite honestly, I wouldn't be surprised in those cases that the so-called temporary staff were left-wing activists who were instructing these Native Americans in how to vote. This is the whole point of doing this kind of thing. An ordinary Native American is like, I don't even live in America. I'm on a reservation. We're a separate nation. What do we have to do with what you crazy people are doing? And so it's like, oh, no, listen, you know what? Here's a form. I'll fill it out for you. All you have to do is sign here at the bottom. So all of these shenanigans are going on, and the left knows about it. It's not like they're innocent of it. They're NPR knows about it, but they're for it. They want elections to be conducted in this way. And so they're acting as if the Zuckerberg money was completely above board. There was no partisan bias. Zuckerberg himself didn't even know who he was going to vote for. And so the idea here is that no political bias, and Republicans are just making a big fuss about absolutely nothing. No, the Republicans are making a big fuss, but they're making a big fuss because all of this creates vulnerability to massive fraud. Molly Hemingway demonstrates this very well in her book. She talks about how at every level, there's the drop boxes and the mail-in ballots. Then there's the signature matching. I mean, think about it. If you are sending in an absentee ballot, you don't show up. It's just an envelope. A name, an address, a signature. If you don't match that signature, how do you know if it's even coming from an eligible voter? Signature matching is critical. Sure enough, the left is fighting lawsuits to weaken these signature matching requirements. Left doesn't want voter ID. So in every way, it's kind of like making sure that there are no checks on the bank. So just in case Bonnie and Clyde show up, just in case you got some bank robbers, they're going to be like, our life is made incredibly easy. No security guards between 2 and 4 in the morning. That's when they turn off the surveillance cameras. They've even asked the tellers not to be, too rigorous, too fastidious about signature matching. So the bottom line of it is our job is now facilitated. We can now do what we set out to do. In fact, we've been doing it as a party for 150 years, but this is 2020. We can do it in the new scale, and we can perhaps get the outcome that we have sought from the beginning. If you want to know the truth behind the events of January 6, 2021, well, Jake Lang, incarcerated political prisoner, has it all in a documentary with footage that has never been seen before by the public. It's the raw and uncut truth about January 6th, the day when free men and women stood unarmed against tyranny and were brutalized, beaten, even murdered on the steps of our own Capitol, and where brave Americans came together to defend the Constitution with free and fair elections. Take a journey with Jake Lang to remember the heroes who came to the Capitol to peacefully protest. Watch this documentary dedicated to Roseanne Boylan, Ashley Babbitt, Benjamin Phillips, and Kevin Greeson, who lost their lives defending our country that day. Seeing is believing. Go now to j6truth.org. It's not about what you've heard and been told by the mainstream left media. It's the uncut truth. Go now to j6truth.org. Thank you and God bless America. We're still in the immediate aftermath of Roe versus Wade, and I think the left is really reeling from this decision. Now, Debbie says, hey, listen, what are they whining about? We haven't ended abortion. They act like we have. Oh, you've ended abortion. Oh, abortion rights. And literally, we've seen social media clips of women who are like bursting into tears and then screeching with rage. And the first question we have is like, where are you doing this from? Are you doing this from Illinois? Are you doing this from Portland? Are you doing it from California? Well, you're going to be able to get your abortion. So this freak out is a sort of, you almost call it theatrical. Perhaps it's hypothetical. If I were in the position of a woman in Alabama. But you know what? There are a lot of pro-life women in Alabama. They're voting for laws that restrict abortion in Alabama. And so these hysterics are performative. They're performance artistry, to use one of our kind of cherished terms. But the left is, they don't know what to do here. They're obviously one thing they have to do, and they'll eventually get around to this, is fight at the local level. They're going to have to fight in the states, and it's not going to be easy because there are a lot of states that don't want to have abortion on demand, and there are some states that don't want to have abortion at all. And so you're going to have to go there and make your case and see if you can persuade people. This is what democracy is all about. Now, interestingly, there's a lot of rhetoric out there to the effect that the court that decided this is, quote, illegitimate. They're questioning the legitimacy of the court. Now, ordinarily, this would be just be a rhetorical point, but here's something interesting. They blast us for being enemies of the state, enemies of democracy. Why? Because we question the results of an election. And their point is, you can't question the legitimacy of an election. And my point now is, you can't question the legitimacy of the court. Why? Because our system is divided into three branches. We have a legislative branch, an executive branch, and a judicial branch. Which of those three branches, according to the Constitution, is the most legitimate? Answer, all three of them. They're equally legitimate. Our whole system is based on separation of powers, in which we've got three branches of government of equal legitimacy. And so the point I want to make is if it's okay to question the Supreme Court as illegitimate, in a sense denying its validity as a democratic institution or as an organ of constitutional democracy, why can't you question the legislature on the same grounds? So the left here is caught up in a little bit of an awkward situation because it's always okay for them. It's okay for them to question elections, not okay for us. They questioned the 2016 election. No problem. When we question the 2020 election, oh, you can't do that. I mean, let's think about this. The left questioned not only the 2016 election, they questioned the 2004 election, Bush versus Kerry. They certainly questioned the 2000 election, Bush versus Gore. The last time the left accepted without complaint the result of a presidential election that they lost was 1988. So what's new now, or recently is not that people are questioning elections. Oh, that's a bridge too far. No, Democrats have habitually been questioning elections. What's new is Republicans, for the first time, the party of go along and get along, the party that goes, oh, well, we lost, better luck next time, we'll have to work harder. So Republicans generally don't do this, but they did it for the first time in 2020. Now, back to the situation with Roe v. Wade and abortion. I'm reading that all these Planned Parenthoods are closing in red states around the country. Now, that's obviously good news in itself. Planned Parenthood is basically a barbaric organization founded by a barbaric individual, Margaret Sanger, an out-and-out racist, someone who actually talked about thinning out the Negro population, someone who talked about social undesirables as human weeds. And she was talking here not just about poor blacks, yes, poor Hispanics, yes, but also poor whites. So here you have someone who essentially is a eugenicist, someone who wants to use, in her case, birth control. This was Margaret Sanger talking before abortion, but essentially to get rid of people who she thought were a net minus for society. The undesirables, in her view. But here's the question I was thinking about. Planned Parenthood has been telling us for decades that they're not really in the abortion business. In fact, one of their famous slogans is, only 3% of our business is abortion. And yet my point is, so if abortion is outlawed, it's kind of like a store that can't sell 3% of its products. You can't sell, okay, fine, I've got hundreds of products in the store, I can't sell 3% of them. So the store would stay in business, but the fact that these Planned Parenthoods are closing is very telling, because what it really tells you is this is their business. It's kind of like saying, hey, listen, you know, Planned Parenthood is kind of like a gas station. You know what? Yeah, they sell some Coke and they sell some chips, but what's their core business? Gas. If you didn't have gas to sell, gas stations would go out of business. Why? Because that's their business. Planned Parenthood is in the abortion business. They always act like it. They're not. We're actually selling a bunch of other stuff. See, right here, we're actually selling, you know, tampons, and we sell some condoms, and, you know, we sell a few other things besides. We don't just do abortions, Dinesh. Only 3% of our business. Okay, that's fine. Well, let's stop doing abortion then. Oh, shoot, our business now has to shut down. Can't continue anymore. Close the doors, guys. Pink slips for everybody. Severance payments. We're out of here. I love the 4th of July. It's time to reflect on how blessed we are to live in this amazing country. Well, one way you can celebrate is by joining AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. Membership to AMAC comes with benefits like travel, cell phone discounts, special insurance programs. What's more, it's patriotic because your membership supports causes that help preserve liberty. AMAC's Action Advocacy Team takes the fight to Capitol Hill every day, representing the concerns of true patriots. For just $16 a year, you can join AMAC like Debbie and I have and help keep our beloved America free. Go to amac.us/Dinesh to sign up. By joining AMAC, you'll join forces with over 2.3 million other freedom-loving AMAC members and help save America for your children and grandchildren. So say happy birthday, America, and go to amac.us/Dinesh to become an AMAC member now. We have had some very important rulings from the Supreme Court on issues like religious freedom, the No Establishment Clause, obviously abortion, but also guns, gun rights. And this has been clearly one of the most important Supreme Court terms in modern history, maybe for some decades, maybe even going back to 1973, which was the year of the Roe decision. But the court is not really done. We're waiting for one final, you know, big decision. It doesn't seem like a big decision when you first look at it. It's the case involves the EPA, the so-called Environmental Protection Agency, and it has to do with the degree to which the Environmental Protection Agency can regulate greenhouse gases. Now, the federal government is littered with these regulatory agencies, and they are very ambitious. They basically think that they own the domain that they cover. So, for example, the CDC, in a sense, owns the domain of health. The Environmental Protection Agency owns the domain of the environment. And so they think, yeah, we can basically tell any company what to do in the name of the environment. And just like the CDC said, we can tell people what to do in the name of health. But the question is, where do these agencies get the authority to make these sweeping decisions? We had a taste of this, by the way, when the Biden administration, through the CDC, issued a rule that basically said any company with over 100 employees must require a vaccine. And if you don't, there were all kinds of penalties and fines. And this went before the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, you know, you're a CDC. You have the authority to make certain declarations and proclamations and perhaps even rules regarding health. But you don't have unlimited power here. Another agency, by the way, that was involved in this CDC enterprise was the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, so-called OSHA. Because OSHA was claiming that this mandate, the vaccine mandate, was required by occupational safety. And the court was like, actually, no. Occupational safety has things to do with, you know, you're working in a big building and something falls on your head. Or there's asbestos in the building that's going to cause a health. So your job is to regulate that. But the idea that you can take the broad rubric of occupational safety and start telling the entire U.S. workforce of people who work for companies with over 100 employees, you have to get a shot in your arm. The court goes, no, you don't have the authority to do that. Congress can pass a law and we'll consider the constitutionality of that, but Congress has not passed a law. So what we're dealing with here, we're dealing with the critical issue. You've got a legislature, Congress, and then you've got these federal agencies which are part of the executive branch. And what the court is considering is, when Congress sets up one of these agencies, do they get a carte blanche? Do they get an open license to make whatever rules they want? Or rather, do they have a specific and delineated mission? They have to stay within the sort of boundaries of that mission. And if they go outside that mission, then the court has every right to say, there is no authority for you to do this. Now, in other words, do these federal agencies, which are part of the executive branch, have broad authority, or do they have more specific, enumerated, and delineated authority? That's the issue here. And the reason this is important is that the Supreme Court, by the way, you could tell when the case came up before the court that a clear majority, and maybe even more than 5-4 or even 6-3, were of the view that, you know, the EPA is taking a lot of liberties here and basically deciding, we're going to shut down these plants, we're going to leave these plants open, we're going to tell this guy what to do, we're going to tell this guy what. And the court was like, where do you have the authority to make these kinds of sweeping decisions? But the point is that if the court strikes down the EPA's authority here, it's raising a broader question, which is to say, can other agencies that have been doing kind of the same thing, they now have to be a lot more careful? In other words, we're talking here about a way to rein in the power of the federal government itself. Now think of what, conservatism means. Conservatism means limiting, at least in part, limiting the power of the government. And we have found in the last several decades that this is not an easy thing to do. Government has, Reagan made this point, a kind of a natural tendency to expand and to grow. But here we have before the court an opportunity to really trim the sails of the government. And so this becomes a really important case, and I hope that the court decides it not on the narrow grounds that in this particular case, the EPA exceeded its authority. If the court says that, then other agencies will feel like, well, this decision doesn't apply to us. We can continue sort of undisturbed or unmolested. But if the Supreme Court basically says, listen, we've seen this mad proliferation of agencies which take it upon themselves to do whatever they want, from now on, they're going to have to stay within their given parameters, stay within their enumerated authority that is delegated by Congress, but they don't have this kind of open blank check, you might say, to take what Congress has given them, set up an agency, and think that since they're setting up an agency in a particular domain, they somehow are the sovereigns of that domain. It's pretty colorful. You've probably noticed at the grocery store in the produce section, all those vibrant colors of fruits and veggies. Well, our friend Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all those colors you see represent nutritional variety. Different colors signify different key nutrients. If you eat only your favorite one or two veggies, you're missing a whole world of vital nutrients. That's why Debbie and I take those six little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Take a look. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. So 31. Variety equals vitality. Give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. Invest in your health. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code BALANCE. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. Guys, I'm really happy to welcome to the podcast Dr. Simone Gold. You know Dr. Simone Gold. She's the founder of the America's Frontline Doctors. She's a board-certified emergency physician. She's also the author of a provocative, top-selling book. It's called I Do Not Consent, My Fight Against Medical Cancel Culture. She's a graduate of Chicago Medical School, Stanford University Law School, and she has been prominent in public speaking. And welcome, Dr. Gold. Thank you for joining me. And we're here to... We want to talk about your absurd and preposterous case in which you found yourself in D.C. on January 6th. Talk about why you went to D.C. in the first place.
Thank you so much, Dinesh. And I was in Washington, D.C. doing public speaking. That's what I've been doing since really the beginning of the COVID lockdowns. And I spoke out publicly against the lockdowns. There was a big article, 600 doctors protest mass casualty incident. The lockdowns are not helpful. The masks were not helpful. And early treatment is helpful. Because I was so broadly censored on social media, I would speak in person a lot. I've been at churches. I've been in civic halls. I've been at restaurants. I've been at businesses everywhere. So when I have an opportunity to speak to a million people, of course, I'm going to take it. So I was an invited guest speaker at the Capitol on January 6th. And that's the reason I was there.
Now, let's talk about you were presumably scheduled to speak at a location perhaps outside the Capitol, right? Talk about what is the series of events that led you to physically be inside the Capitol? How did that occur? Was it something that happened organically? What did you know and what were you doing?
Thank you. Yes, there was a permitted platformed area. I'm not in charge of the organization, but it had been set up for a long time. When the speakers arrived, I think there was 20 different speakers and security. We made our way in the crowd. By the way, it was an enormous crowd. It took 45 minutes to walk less than a mile, I would say. When we presented ourselves, there was we were not allowed to speak. We don't know why it got canceled, but somebody in authority had canceled it. Perhaps it was the mayor. Perhaps it was, I don't know, Congress. We don't know, but it was canceled. Because of that, I made my way to the top of the steps and I started publicly speaking there. That's why I was in the front of the steps. I want to also emphasize that I personally was on the east side, which was not the scaffolding side. So any pictures people have seen tended to be the scaffolding side. I was on the east side. We did not see violence. It was very peaceful, very kumbaya-ish, but I was at the top of the steps because the permitted location where we were, at the last moment, someone in authority said all the public speakers, like myself and Congress people too, were scheduled to speak, could not speak.
Now, so was it kind of your thought that, listen, I'm here to give my speech. I'm not allowed to speak here. Let me look for a venue, in a sense, nearby where you have a crowd. I can stand up. I can say what I came to Washington, D.C. to say. And you found yourself inside the building. Was there any obstruction? Did somebody tell you don't come in here? Was the door blocked? How did you actually get in?
The free will that I had was to put myself on the top of the steps because I wanted to speak to people and there were so many people to speak to. After that, there was a crowd of tens of thousands behind me. Somebody opened the doors from the inside. As you know, it was impossible to open the doors from the outside. Somebody on the inside opened the doors and I, because I was towards the front, really got pushed in along with the masses of people. That's how I physically stepped into the Capitol. That's exactly how it happened. I was charged with entering and remaining. And this is why I took a plea, because I was physically there. I didn't have the mindset. I didn't have the mens rea to commit trespass, but my body was physically there. That's how I saw my way to accepting a plea. I don't think I should have been put in that position, however, because I really went in involuntarily because there's tens of thousands of people behind me. Lots of video proving that. But the government puts you in such a position where they overcharge you with crimes that you didn't do, and you really squeezed so hard that you're forced to, you know, say things like, I will accept a plea for being physically present, even though I didn't have the mindset or the intent to technically trespass.
Simone, what additional charges might they have threatened you with, or that you feared might happen? Because, or was it also that you sort of feared that, you know, you're in Washington, D.C., what kind of a jury is it? Is it really a jury of my peers? It seems like a bad situation all around.
Everyone has to make up their own mind. But for me, I would have taken my chances with any jury on a misdemeanor. But they attached a felony charge to me, which was overcharge. It was obstruction of justice. I forget what it was, the exact title, but it was a 20-year felony. Now, I'm a lawyer. You are not allowed on the government side, on the prosecution side, to bring charges if you don't have the evidence to support those charges. People maybe think that it's up to the jury to decide. No, it's up to the jury to decide if they believe the evidence in front of them. But the government is not allowed to bring a charge, an overcharge, if they don't have the evidence to prove the elements of the crime. They do not have the elements to prove the crime of obstruction against me. They never should have charged me with that. They've done that to many January 6th defendants. But when the government has all the power, the heavy hand, to charge you with a 20-year felony, you have to make your decisions very carefully, and that was the decision I made.
Let's take a pause, Simone. When we come back, I want to explore this further and also the implications of a 60-day sentence in federal prison. We'll be right back.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
I'm back with Dr. Simone Gold from America's Frontline Doctors. We're talking about her role in January 6th. Simone, you're describing really a frightening situation, which is to say you have these out-of-control prosecutors, and they come to someone like you, a medical doctor, there to give a speech. You're not even there to protest the election. You're there for a specific purpose. There's a crowd, and we all know that crowds have a kind of momentum of their own. If you're caught up in a crowd, quite honestly, and you try to resist, you're going to get overrun by the crowd. You're sort of pushed into the Capitol. Presumably, you don't deface any property. I'm quite sure you didn't even cross the barricades. And so you're in there. You try to give your speech, and then you leave. And they're talking about charging you with obstruction of justice, which carries years. Now, walk through the mental process, which I think people need to know, where you basically go, even if there's a 5% chance of me being convicted on this absurd charge, I cannot afford to risk my life in that way, in which, what, am I going to be locked up for 20 years? That's insane. So I will take 60 days in prison. Crazy though that is, because it's the lesser evil. And the point is, I will do that whether I'm guilty or not. It makes no difference whether you're guilty or not guilty. Any rational person would make the same choice, whatever situation they're in, correct?
That's correct. I also had an obligation in my mind to the American people. I don't think I can go away for 20 years or 10 years or whatever the judge might decide or the jury might decide. I also didn't want to be distracted from the important work that we're doing. America's Frontline Doctors brings lawsuits all across the nation in terms of our civil liberties, in terms of stopping shot mandates. If you don't have medical freedom, you really don't have freedom. It should be in the Constitution. I hope that we get there one day. That's the work of America's Frontline Doctors, is ensuring medical freedom for all Americans. And the other work that we do is bringing an alternative to the crazy healthcare system that allowed this horrific lies to happen over the last 2 years. And we're doing that by bringing GoldCare, goldcare.com, which is an alternative to what we currently call the medical system, which we saw was just fraud. I could not take myself out of the running for years and years and years. There's nothing that the other side would like more.
Simone, so as a result of the plea, you got 60 days in federal prison. Do you know which facility it's going to be? When does it start? How are you thinking about it? You actually texted me some days ago asking me a question about it, which I tried to answer briefly. I mean, quite honestly, I feel almost a deja vu because the federal government in my case wanted me to put me away for somewhere between 16 months. The maximum sentence was 2 years, but federal prison. And my lawyer was trying to, kind of assure me. He's like, federal prison in white collar is no big deal. He goes, you're going to meet a mayor, you're going to meet a business guy, you're going to meet some other guy who did this. And he goes, you can play chess, you can watch TV. He goes, actually, it's quiet time for a guy who has a crazy life like you. So all this came back to my mind when you sent me your text. But talk a little bit about where that is right now and how you're feeling about it.
So I don't know yet where I'll be going, and I don't know yet when it starts. It is true that I should be assigned to a federal minimum security prison, but until that is what is printed on the paper, I don't know, right? I'm still under the judge's thumb. And so, there's absolutely no reason I would be put anywhere else. But it is still a severe punishment. I mean, I travel a lot. I do public speaking. I'm a very active, dynamic person. And my role is to publicly speak. My role is to lead. And they're taking me a little bit out of that. Having said that, I do welcome the rest. I mean, I have been working very hard for 2.5 years to bring truth. But I've said this to you, you're an immigrant. My father's an immigrant. I love this nation. And to watch the collapse of our civil liberties all around us and to see that most people are not getting it is very heartbreaking. So perhaps my story is serving as an example. I am nonviolent, first time misdemeanor conviction. And the judge is saying 60 days. Wake up, America. That doesn't happen. Does anybody even know people who go to jail for misdemeanors or prison for misdemeanors? It's just as a non thing. So we need to wake up and understand that we're losing our civil liberties. And that's my focus.
Do you think that let's think about what they're up to with the January 6th, because do you think this is ultimately all about Trump, an effort to prevent Trump from being reelected? Do you think it's merely we have to teach these people a lesson, make an example of them? Is it a message to the broader sort of MAGA or Trump supporting movement? Is it part of the left's effort to create a one-party state? I mean, clearly something very important is going on here. What do you think is the heart of it?
If you're the opponent on the other side, you push hard and you see what damage you can cause. It probably started with an attempt to keep Trump out of the next election. However, it's clearly meant to stop people like me, perhaps people like you. People are willing and have the courage to speak up. Why else would you take me down in a violent, violent arrest other than to teach me to be quiet? I've got news to the other side. All you do is embolden people like myself and others. People will watch me and they will get more courage from seeing what happens. I will survive this. I will come out. I will continue to speak. But if the question is, if it's only to get Trump, most definitely not. I think Trump was the one who said, they're not after me. I'm just standing in the way. Trump was just standing in the way. People like me, people like you, they want to stop us. I speak for the people of America and I'm saying no more, no more.
Well, I must commend you for your strength and your courage because, when you're under this kind of pressure, particularly you had the kind of FBI raid that I've never experienced, you can go either way. It can actually break you and you go, okay, I got the message. I won't cause any more trouble. And, we have all kinds of works to the effect that there are people who succumb and who give in, who, in a sense, fly the swastika flag, if you will. But you are one of those people who goes, no, you know what? You're showing me that I have more work to do and I've got to be tougher and I've got to work harder. And the lesson I'm going to take from this is that you people are the real gangsters.
I want to share with you, if I just have a little bit more time, the amount of effort that's put into silencing me has been extraordinary. You're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you. Here's about five different things. One is that the FBI agents, FBI Los Angeles, reported to a state that I was charged with treason. They put that in writing. It's a complete fabrication. That's item number one. Item number two, the California Medical Board president has personally made it her mission to rescind my medical license based upon the fact that she viscerally hates and despises me. She has worked with the California state legislature to craft a bill, California House Bill 2098, that would pull the medical licenses of people like me. I know that it involves me because they spoke about me in committee hearings. In other words, they're putting the full weight of the federal government and the state government on silencing people like me. The good news, what you said, I'm not going to be silenced.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you very much, Simone, for joining me. What a story and what a case. And I know you're going to come out of this stronger and with a bigger voice than ever. Thank you very much.
May I just share with everybody, please check out goldcare.com. And as you know, freedrgold.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.